It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. The cry of "Let's go Bucks" is even louder now that the Pirates have ended a 20-year drought and have their first winning season since 1992. The Buccos are now the darlings of baseball, this season's feel-good story. They have garnered national attention, and the good fortune is trickling down to local businesses as well. I'm joined now in Studio A by our business contributor, Rebecca Harris, along with Jonathan Mayo, a reporter for MLB.com. Rebecca, John, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Nice to be here, Paul.
Thanks for having me.
And we will soon be having another special guest joining the conversation by phone from Boston, Larry Lucchino, who is president and CEO of the Boston Red Sox. So it's going to be a very interesting conversation. In fact, Mr. Lucchino, I understand, is now with us by phone from Boston. Larry Lucchino, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Well, thank you. I love the name.
Well, you are a native, so you would love Pittsburgh and anything associated with Pittsburgh, I'm sure.
I think that's true. How about Jonathan? Isn't he a native of Verona or somewhere?
I am from New Jersey originally. Okay. You did your homework, Larry, but my wife dragged me to Pittsburgh about 12 years ago.
Dragged you, but now you're happy.
Willingly,
she did.
Willingly, yes, I should have.
Oh, okay. There, so you got go. The zeal of the convert.
Exactly right.
Well, the national pastime is flourishing, and according to a recent article in Forbes, the average baseball team is now worth $744 million. That's the average, 23% more than a year ago, and the largest increase since Forbes began tracking MLB finances in 1998. So, Rebecca Harris, as you look at the business of baseball and the impact of the Pirates on this, ending their drought, on just the big picture of baseball finances. What about this?
Well, as everybody can imagine, certainly last night and this morning was just amazing, and we're all so excited. So I think right now, to really understand the business of baseball from behind the scenes, what we did today, Paul, was to really bring in some experts to help us understand these huge numbers, and these truly are huge numbers, and the trends. So let's start.
Well, and before we get to the experts, Rebecca, is the business of baseball, is it big business?
It truly is big business. I think when you look at all the factors that come into play, the television, the radio, the season tickets, the seats, the concessions, and the list goes on and on, that as our experts will tell us, it is a huge business.
I think, this is Larry, if I may add, I think Rebecca is right. There's been a change in baseball in recent years. It has become a much larger and somewhat more international business than it has ever been. But that's a relatively recent phenomenon. Baseball is given a lot of attention, but the Pirates were for many years a smaller business than the Giant Eagle in Squirrel Hill. I mean, their revenues were probably a lot higher than the Pirates. So I think you have to recognize that there's been an evolution, and TV and cable television have been largely responsible for that, and a little bit of internationalization.
Good point.
Well, finally, the Pirates have a winning season. Now, Larry Lucchino, your Red Sox, as of yesterday, were 7.5 games ahead in the AL East and pretty much assured a lock to...
Oh, please don't say that to a superstitious baseball executive.
Yeah, I forgot I was talking to somebody from Boston. Yeah. But there's been a lot of good fortune since you've been associated with the franchise, and certainly in the last decade with a couple of world championships for the Red Sox. But the Red Sox have perpetually been in the race to win their division of late, certainly different from a team like the Pirates, which is in a smaller market and has had a less stellar record. So, Larry, how important to baseball is this year's success of the Pirates for the overall good of Major League Baseball and for the business side of baseball?
It's a good thing. It's a good thing for baseball. It's a good thing for baseball when a city like Pittsburgh, which has a glorious baseball tradition, succeeds and reawakens their public and their market. It's a good thing for baseball when a team with a relatively small revenue base is able to succeed by dint of intelligent baseball selections and player selections and good management. It's a good thing for baseball when there's a broad-based participation in the postseason by teams of all types and revenue bases. Now you're right. We've been spoiled here. We've been in the playoffs six times in like the last 11 years, and we've won a couple of World Series championships. But it's a slightly different game today. Every time there's a collective bargaining agreement, there's a change in rules and protocols that allow for a greater competitive balance. And the commissioner, I think, is quite proud of the competitive balance he's brought about.
I think, if I may, just from an overall health of baseball business standpoint, when you have a team like the Pirates succeed, I think it points to, or baseball can point to the revenue sharing system that it has, and that it actually works when it's used well by teams. And there's been some questions along the way. Well, are the Pirates using the revenue sharing, or smaller market teams, are they using that money the right way? Are they just pocketing it to make bigger profits? And there's been a lot of debate about that. But I think what the Pirates have been able to do, and it took them a while with the way they were doing it through their farm system and things like that, they were using revenue sharing to what they feel is their fullest potential, given the market size and the revenue size, and they're reaping the benefits now this year.
Well, and I would add to that comment that they've used the draft, the best vehicle that's out there for equalizing talent. They've used it quite well in recent years. It's not always been the case. But in recent years, they've been one of the most aggressive players. They've spent some of the most money of any team in baseball on the draft. I know that they've spent something close, or perhaps even exceeding what we have spent on the draft, and we're pretty heavy spenders on the draft.
Given the success of the Pirates this season, and really in the last couple of years, and as you mentioned, a lot of it based on their success with the draft. And not necessarily spending their resources on big-time free agents. But will this season's success change that? What do you think, Jonathan?
Well, there's been a sort of general uptick the last couple of years in their payroll. And it's been, moderate in terms of bringing in free agents like A.J. Burnett and Russell Martin, where they've been spending a bit. They haven't, spent extravagantly. And honestly, the Pittsburgh Pirates of the world will never compete with the Boston Red Sox of the world in terms of probably the high ticket free agents. And Larry, you can disagree, but there has been a lot of talk that with the success that the Pirates have had, it is easier to sell the fact that they can add to their payroll. Probably, ticket prices will go up accordingly, which, typically happens after a successful season. But they will start to, now that they've rebuilt the big league roster to being successful, I think they will start paying more attention, at least in terms of using that revenue towards that. They're never going to stop using a good chunk of that money on the draft and internationally and things like that, because that's the only way to have continuity in terms of success in a market like this.
I think that the Pirates are but another illustration that you don't need marquee names, long-term, gigantic contracts to win in baseball. That's not necessarily a formula for success. It has been used on and off since 1976, 1977, when the free agency came into existence. There are better, longer term, and more successful ways of building a franchise, and it smacks of a cliche, but it's the farm system, stupid.
We're talking about the success of about baseball as big business, and the success of the Pirates, and how that's impacted the business of baseball. With our guests today on Essential Pittsburgh, Larry Lucchino, president and CEO of the Boston Red Sox, also Jonathan Mayo, a reporter for MLB.com, and all of this pulled together by our business contributor, Rebecca Harris, who is in Studio A along with us. Larry Lucchino, the relationship between teams and their ballparks, for the Pirates, I want to look at that, because for the Pirates, before their recent success in the last year or two, they relied very much on the appeal of PNC Park to their fans to draw people into the park. And you created – you're the guy that's credited with creating the boutique ballpark stadiums, Oriole Park at Camden Yards and Petco Park. You're known for having initiated the trend of building baseball-only facilities with this old-fashioned charm, what some people call the retro parks. Has this model helped increase attendance, sponsorships, and concession sales, not just here in Pittsburgh but all around the big leagues?
I think unquestionably, yes. The best proof of that is that since Camden Yards was built, something like 21 of ballparks out of the 30 in baseball have had a new ballpark built. It might even be 22, and virtually all of them are some variation of the traditional old-fashioned ballpark with modern amenities. I need to cite my Pittsburgh roots, really, because I've only had one really good original idea in my 30 years in baseball, and that was to build a traditional old-fashioned ballpark with irregularity, with asymmetry, with intimacy, and to make the seats as close as possible and try to create a ballpark, not a stadium, because I grew up with Forbes Field and saw how great Forbes Field was, a ballpark in the city, in a neighborhood, in a park, and I saw the blasphemy that was Three Rivers Stadium and the way that it was it functioned. Now, a lot of great football victories came out of that place and a few baseball victories, but it lacked what I consider the essential elements of a baseball park, and I think it was but one of several concrete donuts built in the 60s and 70s that retarded the growth of baseball, in my opinion.
National broadcasting fees are baseball's biggest chunk of equally shared revenue. Last year, Fox, TBS, and ESPN inked new 8-year broadcasting deals that will bring MLB a total of $12.4 billion over 8 years, and that's an average of $52 million a season for each of the teams, or for each of the league's 30 teams through 2021. The new deals begin with the 2014 season, so next year that all starts, and they are worth more than twice the league's existing television contracts, more than twice the existing contracts worth. Can or will baseball survive as we know it if the TV revenue model changes? And do you think that this will happen? Jonathan Mayo, reporter for MLB.com, what do you think?
I think the short answer is yes. There are a lot of people who feel, live sports is one of the few things that is kind of DVR-proof. People want to watch it live. Sure, you can DVR it and tell people, don't tell me what the score is. I've never understood people like that. I think there's always going to be people who want to watch their sports live, whether it's on the standard old-fashioned television or whether it's on your handheld device or whether it's on your computer. That remains to be seen. But I think, baseball has this reputation of kind of being slow-moving and old-fashioned, but in terms of the online and mobile world, and this is a shameless plug for my employer, obviously, but we've been very much ahead of the curve in terms of that sort of thing. And the app that MLB.com developed, MLB At Bat, is the top grossing sports app ever. So maybe eventually the revenue stream from national TV and somewhat from local TV, and that's where some of the disparities between teams come in, I think, on those local TV contracts, maybe those will dry out some over time. I don't think they will in its entirety. But I think baseball is really well positioned to reap the benefits of the seemingly ever-increasing revenue streams that come from the online and mobile world.
Well, Paul, your question, I think, went to the traditional network television deals that had increased significantly.
Right.
And I think Jonathan is right to point out that there's a second dimension, and that is the online or small screen TV, as we refer to it up here. And I think there's the answer is that network television, I think, will be popular for the foreseeable future, and large and long deals with the networks, I think, are just part of the television landscape going forward. There are, however, possibilities for change on the smaller screen or cable television world too. Now, in cable television, there are issues that threaten the current approach that distributors take. That's one thing. And while Jonathan is correct, baseball has done some has gotten ahead of the wave, so to speak, with some elements of internet television. We are still buried in the sand when it comes to streaming of local games. There's kind of a standoff in baseball, and for us to continue the success that we've had in recent years, there has got to be a time when we unlock the small screen TVs and allow people to get their games locally on their phones and on their smaller devices.
We're talking about the business of baseball. Our guest, Larry Lucchino, president and CEO of the Boston Red Sox. Also, Jonathan Mayo, a reporter for MLB.com. Our business contributor, Rebecca Harris, is with us here on Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer on 90.5 WESA. In order for baseball's future to grow, what many think needs to be done is to attract younger audiences. Most baseball is now broadcast at night. There are, especially in the postseason, very few day games that kids can attend or even stay up and watch. And there are a lot of sports competing for attention. How concerned are you about the ability of kids and the average working person to stay up and watch these postseason games that are ending up going later and later into the night on network television? Jonathan.
I think, you know, I'm kind of two minds because this has been an issue that's brought up and talked about seemingly forever in terms of what's happening with baseball. Yet you quoted the numbers in terms of what, you know, the average team is worth. Revenue was up quite a bit in 2012. So clearly baseball is doing well from a financial standpoint. I think in terms of the long-term success of that, yes, they do need to continue to try to find ways to appeal to younger fans. And I've always been a fan of more day games. I have a 12-year-old and a 9-year-old at home, and I would love to be able to bring them to more games at PNC Park. I know they would like to go more too, but you know, because of the scheduling, it does make it a little more difficult. I think there have been some inroads into that. I think there have been some inroads into inner-city markets, which have been left barren for quite some time. With urban youth academies to get more people playing the sport where it used to be very popular. And I think that will help. But I think there's always going to be a push-pull between attracting young fans and the revenue that comes with those TV contracts, and they like their games in primetime.
And Larry, you've seen the Red Sox-Yankees games that go, you know, these marathon games that are going 4 and 5 hours late into the night. Long past when anybody who's between the ages of 8 and 10 would be allowed to stay up and watch. And this is your fan base of the future. And are you concerned or worried that they are missing some of the key moments of today?
Absolutely. Absolutely, I'm concerned. I think, Paul, you put your finger on one of the most pressing issues facing baseball as an industry, and that's to continue its appeal to young people going forward. And there are at least a couple of things we can do. One, we can deal head-on with the speed and pace of the game and the length of games. Both are issues. Length and pace are both issues. And I think the times are different. The pace of our times is different. And I think there is a need to address that. I think the commissioner is trying again to do that. And I'm hopeful that this time there'll be some changes. And I know we go long in many of our games with the Yankees, but if some systemic changes are made, that will help mitigate the length of those games. And it's important to attracting young people that games not be 3 and 4 hours long. And the second thing that can be done is the thing I alluded to a few minutes ago. We can unlock the streaming world and allow young people who live and die with their small screens, be they smartphones or iPads or whatever, we can allow them to see TV at more times. So it's more than just a simple question of having more day games. I think there's a lot that can happen and has to happen for baseball to increase its appeal for you, for younger viewers.
We are out of time, folks, but it's been a fascinating discussion. Thanks to Larry Lucchino, president and CEO of the Boston Red Sox, also Jonathan Mayo, a reporter for MLB.com, and our business contributor, Rebecca Harris, for producing this segment. Thank you all for being part of the show.
Thanks for letting me come back home on the 82nd victory day. Thank you.
Thank you, Paul.
Thanks so much, Paul.
Thanks for listening. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. So long for now.